I'm Grant Bartley from Philosophy Now magazine. You're listening to the Philosophy Now radio show, and tonight we're doing a festival of philosophy, just a bit more lighter than stuff that I've done before. I have with me some representative of London's popular philosophy organisations. I have Anya Steinbauer from Philosophy for All, Rick Lewis from Philosophy Now magazine, which is the magazine I work for, and Peter Worley from the Philosophy Foundation. And obviously they're going to be talking a little later about what their organisations do. But first of all, I want to ask each of them the same question, starting with you, Anya. What is philosophy to you, and why is it important to you?
Ah, philosophy. Philosophy is very, very important. Well, it's, you know, the question of what is philosophy, of course, is a philosophical question in itself. So you're asking me to philosophize, which is brilliant because I love doing it. Philosophy basically is the exercise of good reasoning. And it's always critical. So it's critical reasoning. And it can and it should be applied to absolutely everything. And that's why it's so practical.
Okay. Is there a particular way you can apply it to everything which marks out philosophy from just asking general questions, for instance?
Yeah, I think that makes good sense. So philosophy really is an area that's not defined by its subject matter. So physics, for instance, you know, defined by what it's about. It's about how bodies behave in time and space or something like that. But philosophy, well, as I say, you can philosophize about anything, and it's a particular kind of approach. Of course, it's a number of approaches. It's a pluralism. But basically, it means a critical approach, a well-reasoned approach. It's about good quality thinking.
Okay. When you say good quality, I mean, that just means that you like it. Can you be a bit more exact about what you mean by good quality?
Well, there are a lot of things that are meant by that, really. So on a very basic level, it means something like, well, you shouldn't contradict yourself. And you might think, well, that's very basic. I don't need a philosopher to tell me that.
Right.
But actually, you know, people do much more often than they think. Mm-hmm. So we've just got to pay good attention to what they say and how they say it.
Okay, and maybe examining your assumptions or asking
Absolutely.
Questions that other people
Our own and other people's, yes.
Okay. Okay, Rick, what is philosophy to you, and why is it important to you?
Well, yes, the question of what philosophy is a very difficult question, of course. I think G.E. Moore, apparently...
Who's G.E. Moore?
G.E. Moore was a philosopher in the early part of the 20th century. Uh-huh. He was a good friend of Bertrand Russell.
Right.
Major figure in philosophy back then. And he was once asked, when he was sitting in his study, what philosophy was, and he pointed to all the books on the shelves behind him and said, well, philosophy is what those are about.
Right.
Which is probably an example of an answer which is true without being particularly helpful.
Let's hope he was pointing to philosophy books.
Otherwise, it would have been an answer which was untrue as well as unhelpful, which would have been even worse. But yeah, like Anya says, philosophy's one of the things about that defines philosophy is not its subject matter, but how it's done. It's an activity. I think Wittgenstein said that. And I think philosophy's one of the reasons that philosophy is so difficult to define is that it's any kind of systematic inquiry into the nature of the universe or of human life. Apart from all the bits that have split off to become other special subjects like physics and
or
psychology.
Science. So all these things have stemmed from philosophy.
They all used to be branches of philosophy. They split away, and that makes it a little bit difficult when you look at philosophy to say, well, what links all these disparate areas? One thing that links them is the fact, the nature of the approach to tackling such questions.
Which is what?
By the application of reason, you can also define the approach by saying what it's not. It's not the experimental approach, which is used in physics and chemistry and other sciences of this kind. And that is because the questions tackled by philosophy tend to be the ones where it's difficult to use the experimental approach. It's not that philosophers got anything against that; they'd use it if they could. But it's generally the questions which philosophy tackles are ones where it's difficult to sort them out by experimentation.
Otherwise, the scientists would be doing it, right?
Exactly.
Okay. All right, Pete. What about you? What is philosophy to you, and why is it important to you?
Right. Well, again, I agree with much of what Rick and Anya have said, but I think it also it might be worth borrowing something from Wittgenstein again, and I don't think that you can come up with a list of necessary and sufficient conditions of what philosophy is, as Socrates would have liked to have done. Perhaps something more Wittgensteinian is what we need to do, something like a list of family resemblances.
Okay, so let me stop you there. Wittgenstein had a theory that words, different meanings of words bear family resemblances to one another. So we're talking about the family resemblances of the meaning of philosophy, perhaps?
That's right. There can be a set of features that something has, and a resemblance to a family member. You have similar sets of features, but you don't have all the same sets of features. No. And in fact, there's no one defining set or feature but at the same time, when you see two people standing next to you who are related, you can tell that they are. And I think that if you were to put a list of things that philosophy includes, what you're not looking for an exhaustive list. What you're looking for is a list that in some cases you'll see this and in some cases you'll see that from the list happening when philosophy is happening. But I think that possibly one contender as a necessary feature of philosophy might be the meta aspect.
Which means?
I think Anya's already hit upon this when she said it's a kind of critical attitude. At the very beginning you said this question is itself a philosophical question. And a meta aspect is a sort of an aspect at a remove where something looks at itself and is critical. And I think one way of putting it might be like this. You could sit on an aeroplane and listen to someone telling you their philosophy of life for several hours. And they might well refer to philosophers, and they might use the language of philosophy, they might use all the words that we might recognise. But if they haven't exercised any critical faculties about what they're saying, if they haven't reflected on what they're saying, then I would argue that that's not philosophy.
Okay, and you want to come in there?
Yes, because Pete was actually quoting Wittgenstein, and I just thought, well, Wittgenstein has another important thing to contribute to this question of what is philosophy, because he tells us that philosophy is an activity and not a theory. And I think that's a really important thing to point out. And I would also like to say, on a more personal level, it's not just any kind of activity, but it's the most vital, fundamental, and one of the most exciting and rewarding activities. So to me, if philosophy was a cocktail, it would be a mixture of Sex on the Beach and the Elixir of Life.
To me, it would be a Molotov cocktail. Okay,
I want to second that and say that philosophy, to me, has got a lot to do with dialogue.
Right.
It's a conversation. And I heard a lovely thing on the radio this evening on a programme about Wittgenstein. He's really sort of featuring here. In which one of the speakers on Great Lives said that when you have a conversation with other people, it makes rhetoric. Yeah. But when you have a conversation with yourself, it makes philosophy.
Okay.
And I think there's a sense in which the best philosophy is the philosophy which is done with a dialogue with oneself, and the best kind of philosophy you have with others is where it resembles that kind of dialogue.
Okay, great. Let me just throw out one question that occurs to me. How, if anybody can have a go at this if they can think of a good answer, how do you know the difference between bad philosophy and non-philosophy? That's a difficult one, isn't it?
Well, bad philosophy is an attempt at reasoning that fails, but non-philosophy is no reasoning at all. It's just rhetoric or manipulation or just appeal to emotion.
Okay, what's the difference between rhetoric and reasoning?
Rhetoric is just making something sound good, and reasoning is actually having something to
say. Actually really going into
giving reasons for what you wish to forward.
Okay.
At the risk of us all sort of singing off the same hymn sheet, as it were, it might be worth distinguishing two kinds of philosophy as well. I think there's informal philosophy and formal philosophy.
Right.
And I think that we're probably all speaking from the point of view of formal philosophy. In other words, we're all trained in academic philosophy to some extent, and we all think academically. We're using reason to be the essential feature of philosophy, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Whereas, of course, for many people, especially perhaps in the informal sense of the word, for many people, philosophy can encapsulate a huge go beyond reason. And in fact, some of the best philosophy has even challenged the hegemony of reason, and it's worth mentioning that.
Yes.
Can you reasonably challenge reason?
Way.
Can you reasonably challenge reason?
That's yes, you can.
That's a good philosophical question for you all to ponder that out in radio space.
No, Nietzsche's answer.
Okay. So why is it important? Do you want to go first, Rick? Why is it important?
I think it's important because of the nature of the questions which it tackles.
Such as?
Well, the questions covered by philosophy include some of the most difficult and important questions we face.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them aren't optional questions. There are questions which, for instance, history enthusiasts might be interested in tackling, such as what the causes of the Battle of Waterloo, why did it turn out that way? Which very interesting questions, but not questions which are maybe essential to living a life.
Right.
Whereas there are some philosophical questions which are ones that we just run up against as a result of living our everyday lives, and which are important to the living of those lives.
Can you give me an example or a couple of examples?
What can we know? How should we behave towards one another? Uh-huh. What happens when we die? what's the purpose of our lives?
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's cool. What about you, Anya? Why is philosophy important to you?
Well, I can give you three reasons, which have to do directly with the nature of philosophy. First one is, it's not fluffy. And I think that's really important. So there have been thinkers, you know, Boethius, for instance, a 5th century philosopher might be taken like that, who might make you believe that philosophy can offer you consolation. But I don't think that's the case. I think,
Boethius wrote a book called The Consolation of Philosophy.
Indeed. Nietzsche described the philosopher as a dangerous explosive in the presence of which nothing is safe. And I think that is actually true. So it's not fluffy. So that means it saves you from being lulled into some sort of fluffy, uncritical slumber. Secondly,
which is what we all need in today's society, I would say.
We always need it in any kind of society.
Okay, good.
And secondly, you know, it is difficult. You know, you've got to want to think. I think everybody can do it, but you've got to want to think. That's for sure. And there never are any easy answers. Sometimes they're simple ones, but not easy ones. So you know, that's important. And once you engage in it, what this means is you're no longer satisfied with low-level explanations.
Right.
You're going to go for high-level explanations. And thirdly, well, even once you find an answer, a philosophical answer, it will generate more philosophical questions. So it's sort of a self-generating exercise, and it's in itself very, very compelling.
Okay. Does it actually change people's lives, do you think?
Yes. Thinking changes people's lives. When we change our beliefs, and we sometimes have to, on the grounds of good reasoning, that changes our lives.
Okay.
And I would even say, personally, a good philosophy to me is one that actually changes me a bit.
Okay, good. What about you, Peter? Why is philosophy important to you?
Well, I think that philosophy is dedicated to the analysis and study of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But more than thinking, it's the structure of thought itself, which underpins every discipline and everything we do.
Right.
So if we've got a discipline which is dedicated to the structures of thought, then it seems to me that that subject is incredibly important.
So it's providing the foundations for everything else we think.
I think foundations is a good word.
Okay, because you're from the Philosophy Foundation.
That's right.
All right. Okay, finally, in this section, I want to ask you how did you get into it? So, Pete, do you want to start? How did you get into doing philosophy, or why did you get into doing philosophy?
Well, I think, as with many people, it began by asking fundamental questions from a religious point of view as a young person.
Like, is there a God and such?
All
like
that sort of stuff. Yeah, I got very involved in those sorts of debates. I think my dad was interested in those sorts of questions, and so naturally I became interested in them as well. And that's kind of where it went. But I think there was a sense in which, dare I say it, there's a sense in which I felt that philosophy offered some sort of salvation, in that it kind of started to provide some of the answers, or perhaps answers is the wrong word, but it provided some of the means with which to approach some of the problems that I felt that religions, for instance, were not doing for me at that time.
Okay, do you think it's fulfilled its earlier promise to you?
Well, as I say, I was careful there not to suggest that it made any promises.
Right, okay.
And I think that's one of the key things to learn.
Earlier hopes, then.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think it did... yes, I mean, it helps to clarify. I think you can get a better, more reasoned outlook. You get some sort of balance between your reason and your emotions. I think those sorts of things, perhaps more psychological points, are benefits from doing philosophy. So perhaps I got into what I was doing because I thought that if this could help me, then perhaps this sort of thing can help others too.
Okay, that's very altruistic of you. Okay, Rick, how and why did you get into philosophy?
Oh, okay. Well, the kinds of questions I was interested in when I was growing up really led me into physics rather than philosophy. In fact, we didn't do philosophy in my school. I didn't really have a clear idea of what philosophy was at that point. So I was studying physics, which is a subject I greatly enjoyed. And as a kind of liberal studies option, when I was studying physics in Manchester, there was philosophy of science was offered. That was my first exposure to formal philosophy. later on, I worked in physics, and perhaps because I didn't have a religious faith, I gradually became very interested and worried by questions to do with life's meaning. Excuse me.
Okay.
I remember one possible catalyst for that was not long after I started working for BT Laboratories as a physicist, one of my colleagues took me to the retirement party of somebody that he knew there who was just leaving after 35 years working for the company. And I didn't know the guy who was retiring at all, but somehow during the course of the long afternoon in the pub, we got talking, and he felt the need to sort of unburden himself to the stranger, me, and said that he really thought that he'd wasted his life. Which I thought, as an impressionable 22-year-old, was a very, very sad thing. Mm-hmm. To get to the end of a long career doing something and think that it was a waste of time. I don't know if he still felt that way.
It might have been like 10 pints talking or something.
It could have been. It could have just been a passing move, but it had an effect on me. It made me think about, well, you know, this seems like a terrible thing. If you've just got one life, you don't want to waste it. You want to get it right. So what can we do now, I thought, as a 22-year-old, to ensure that when I'm retiring, or when I'm, you know, in my 80s or 90s or whatever, if I get that far, then what can I do now to ensure that I don't feel then that my life has been wasted? And so then this led me into questions about, you know, well, what is life for, and how can you lead a good life?
Uh-huh. So deeper into the labyrinth we go.
Yep.
Okay, Anya, what about you? Well, how did you get into philosophy?
Well, but like Peter, I mean, I've been interested in philosophical questions for you know, since I was a child. And again, it was sort of in a religious context that mainly, you know, debated ethics and so on. At school, that was in Germany, we were given a choice between religious studies and philosophy. And well, none of us really knew what philosophy was, so mm-hmm. I chose religious studies, and then I heard from the others who had chosen philosophy that they had to write essays about things like, why is red not a prime number? And I thought, oh, I'm so glad I went for the religious studies, at least I know what that's about. Then I really came back into touch with philosophy much later on, when I was at university. I studied Sinology, which I'm sure you all know is Chinese studies. Mm-hmm. And for that, I went to Taiwan for a couple of years and studied at university there. And reading Chinese meant reading the Chinese classics. And they were the classical philosophers, those great philosophers, Confucius, Mencius, Xunzi, and especially Zhuangzi, absolutely outstanding philosophers. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. I wonder whether there's something like that in the West as well.
Yeah, okay.
So I came back and I found out. And many years later, I completed my PhD on contemporary Chinese philosophy. By that time, with a degree in Western philosophy under my belt as well, and I've never left philosophy.
Brilliant. Okay, are we going into a song now? And this is a song by a band that was set up at the LSC called the Critique of Pure Rhythm. And the first song we're going to hear is called "There Ain't No Possible World." Hello, I'm Grant Bartley from Philosophy Now magazine. You're listening to the Philosophy Now radio show. I have with me Anya Steinbauer from Philosophy for All, Rick Lewis from my magazine Philosophy Now, and Pete Worley from the Philosophy Foundation. And I've asked them what philosophy is to them, and now we're just going to talk a bit about their individual organisations. So, who wants to start? What is your organisation? Pete, what is your organisation?
Philosophy Foundation, which was formerly the Philosophy Shop, maybe known to many people with that name, was set up to try to, well, first of all, just to sort of broadly get philosophy out into the community. That was our first sort of premise. And it still is.
To popularise philosophy, perhaps.
Yes, that's right. And to sort of reach out to people, I suppose, with philosophy. But we found that what it's ended up being mostly about is education. And we work mainly in primary schools, but in any kind of education setting, doing philosophy with teachers, with children, particularly with children, and that's kind of the basis of
the some of the people who listen to the podcast, they might that you can also listen to a podcast where Pete sort of demonstrates live on air what he does with the kids. Why did you want to particularly get into teaching children philosophy?
Good question. I think it began with I was already working in schools as a music teacher. I used to teach guitar, mm-hmm. and I did a lot of work in groups. So we had to do this thing where the kids were working on different levels. They had to come up with things that they could do where they were all involved, but working in the level that they were all working at.
Yeah.
And each child was doing their own thing, but the ensemble effect was something different. And I wondered if philosophy could work in a similar way.
Right.
I thought if we could, it's very difficult to do philosophy with one child, I think.
Yeah.
But when you get a group of children together, there's what you might call the ensemble effect. And I think that's when philosophy starts to happen with children. And I thought, what would happen? So I approached a head teacher with the idea, and she was very keen to give it a go. And it literally started.
So
like
you
that.
Weren't you, you didn't really set out to sort of say, I want to teach children philosophy. You sort of fell into it, really.
That's right.
And but you haven't tried to escape from it, so there's clearly something about it that you like, right?
That's right, yeah.
So what is it about it that you really sort of dig?
Good question. Well, I suppose there's a sense in which there's a kind of purity to the philosophy that you do with children.
Uh-huh. What's that mean?
What do I mean by that? There's a sense in which, for instance, we work with the kids, and one of the things that...
What age range do you cover?
Well, I work with with children from nursery up to A-level.
Okay.
So, obviously, what you might call philosophy is very different at those two ends of the spectrum, and I prefer to think of it as a kind of continuous arc. Mm-hmm. So what we do with them in nursery is kind of the beginnings of what will then end at A-level.
Laying the foundations.
Exactly, you've got it. But I think the... what was it you asked me again?
Why are you stuck with children after so many years, let's say?
That's right, yeah. There was a sense in which when you're in a department, you see philosophy going on, but you also see lots of other things as well.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do with the kids is that they learn how to sort of do philosophy in a pure sense. They're not having to show off to each other how much they know, for instance.
Right.
Yeah. So whereas in a department, there's quite a lot of...
A philosophy department. You mean,
yeah, a philosophy department, that's right, a philosophy department. There's a bit of showing off about what you know.
It's a bit of one-upmanship intellectually,
well,
yeah.
To use some technical terms, going back to the dialogue thing, the children... There's aristic dialogue and there's dialectic. Aristic is combative.
Right.
And I think quite a lot of
and this is why you're wrong.
Is this combative mode of,
yeah, right,
of
okay.
conversation. Whereas the children are quite good at joining in with each other and collaboratively exploring, I suppose, truth.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, that's great.
Which is really Platonic dialogue, isn't it? Because Plato said that philosophy should be conducted in an atmosphere of goodwill. So I think that's
right.
Yes, and the people of Athens executed him.
No, they didn't really get the message.
Yeah, so he chose the wrong situation for his goodwill. Okay, Anya, what about your organisation, Philosophy for All? What does that do?
Yes, well, Philosophy for All was founded. Well, I founded it together with a couple of friends in 1998.
Right.
So we've been running since then. And really, the idea was just to provide a forum for anyone interested in philosophy. And that means really spanning...
You mean general public, yeah?
No, it means spanning the whole spectrum from anyone just sort of generally interested in ideas to really academic philosophers.
Uh-huh.
And that has worked very well, bringing together, you know... All this whole spectrum of people has worked out really, really well. We've got monthly lectures we call Kant's Cave lectures on every first Wednesday of the month, and we've never missed one since we started in May 98. We invite academic philosophers, mostly academic philosophers, to come along and to give us a talk and to engage them in a dialogue. And on the whole, I think everybody finds it very rewarding. Well, I mean,
so there's
first
a bit
we
of a debate
something.
Involved in that. Yeah.
There's always debate
they
involved in it, but they find it very rewarding as well. The idea is to just bring philosophy out of the ivory tower environment of academia into the real world.
Yeah, philosophy
and,
to other people, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and even academic philosophers sometimes might find it very refreshing to get sort of common sense questions from, you know, sort of general thinking public rather than the academic colleagues.
Yeah.
So on the whole, it provides a very vibrant kind of atmosphere. And so these events have been very popular. And then we thought, what else can we do with philosophy? And we found that there are a lot of things you can do. So we have philosophical discussions at Bishopsgate Institute. We also have a philosophical film club. We've got a reading group, an existentialist reading group. We have philosophical walks, which basically is just, you know, walk and talk, you know, talk about philosophy, because since everybody's interested in philosophy. And we also have a feminism forum.
Okay, great. That's a lot of things, isn't it?
It's a lot of things.
Okay. Where do people go if they want to find out more? Just look up.
We have a website. It's www.pfalondon.org. Or you can find us on meetup.com, Philosophy for All London.
Okay. And, Rick, what about you? What made... Philosophy Now magazine, which I work for, tell the people a little bit about that and why you set it up.
Oh, sure. Philosophy Now is a magazine which appears every 2 months and is sold from ordinary newsagents and bookshops in quite a lot of countries around the world now.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is basically to make a magazine which contains real good quality philosophy, but which could appeal to everybody who's interested in ideas, not just academic philosophers, although it is read in a lot of universities, it's read by a lot of academic philosophers, by a lot of philosophy students, but the main idea is to make it appeal to the general intelligent public, everybody who's interested in philosophical discussion and philosophical ideas.
Okay, so why did you do that? Why did you want to set this thing up? Apart from obviously commercial reasons.
No, actually not at the time. No, after I'd gone off to study philosophy, mainly philosophy of mind and ethics at the University of York, I went back to my previous job as a physicist, and there I was surrounded by people who were interested in different philosophical questions, mm-hmm. I realized. Questions to do with animal rights, the existence of God, the nature of time, and many other questions. And with one or two exceptions, they had no connection with academic philosophy. Mm-hmm. They hadn't studied it, but they were very interested in questions which were clearly philosophical. And I thought that they, and lots of other people like them, would really benefit from knowing what philosophers down the ages and right now mm-hmm. have been saying about the problems that interest them anyway. So I thought, it's a pity there isn't a magazine which deals with such matters. I mean, there's magazines for everything else. There's magazines for yachting and golf and history and metal detecting and everything. But there wasn't a magazine for philosophy. So
what do you mean, in Britain or
In Britain, really, because that was the only place where I was going into magazine, into newsagents and looking. As it turned out, mm-hmm. there weren't philosophy magazines anywhere else either, as far as I can tell.
Oh, right, okay.
But Britain was what I was looking at the time, because that's where I live. So I thought I'd give it a go. So I wrote to a lot of philosophy departments around the country saying, hey, look, this is what I'm trying to do. Anyone who wants to send us an article aimed at the general public, please do so. And it took a long time to get it going, but that's how we got the first issue off the ground. So originally it was run from my spare bedroom.
And that was 20 years ago?
That was 20 years ago,
because
yes.
Because we've got the 20th anniversary festival coming up, which is what we're going to be talking about in the third part of the situation. Sorry, Anya.
I was just saying, I mean, this is just amazing. I mean, Rick, with Philosophy Now, is right there at the beginning of the sort of popular philosophy movement in this country and sort of helps it, kickstart it. And, we're all now, of course, participating in this. And by now, there's so many organizations mm-hmm. that work in this kind of context and who want to make a contribution, all of us who are here, but also various others. And I think the festival is going to bring everybody together.
Okay, we'll talk about the festival in a few minutes, but just to give you a chance to plug yourselves, Rick, if people want to have a look at the magazine or its contents, what do they need to do? How could they get a copy, for instance?
The internet age, the easiest thing is to go to our website. We've got a pretty good website. Mm-hmm. I think it's www.philosophynow.org.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of free articles there. And you can get a good idea of what the magazine's like.
And you can listen to past podcasts of this program
as
well.
You certainly can.
Okay, and Pete, sorry I forgot to ask you before, but if people were interested in maybe finding out more about what you do, or where would they go?
Right, www.philosophy-foundation.org is our current website address.
Anya?
May I also say, I'm also involved in another project. I've got a great privilege to be one of the co-founders of the London School of Philosophy. Uh-huh. We're also involved in the festival, and we offer courses in philosophy. So that's www.londonschoolofphilosophy.org.
Okay, that's a great lot of plugging there. Now we're going to go into the next song, which is by the Critique of Pure Rhythm, the LSE bunch of bluesters there. This is called Structural Realism Blues. Hello, I'm Grant Bartley from Philosophy Now magazine, and we're talking about popular philosophy in London, really. And I have with me Pete Worley from the Philosophy Foundation, Rick Lewis from Philosophy Now magazine, and Anya Steinbauer from Philosophy for All. And now we're going to be talking about a festival that Philosophy Now is putting on Sunday at Conway Hall to celebrate 20 years of Philosophy Now. So, Rick, why did you particularly feel like you wanted to put on a festival at this time to celebrate this 20 years?
Well, for a few different reasons.
Yeah.
Firstly, to celebrate the fact that the magazine's still going after 20 years. I wouldn't actually have predicted that when we were starting off.
In fact, friends, in your bedroom.
Friends didn't. I mean, we got to about issue two, and we had a lot of people starting to subscribe, and a friend of mine called Steve Peacock said, but what are you going to do when the magazine closes? You'll have to send back everybody's money. Oh, he's right. But happily, we're still going, and so it looks like we'll be going for a while longer. So very happy to celebrate that. That was one reason. Secondly, it's a great opportunity to, by putting on London's first philosophy festival,
right,
to show a lot of people in London all the different ways that they are getting involved in philosophy in London, by bringing together a lot of different philosophy organisations,
right,
doing different things, connecting with philosophy. People can come to one place and see all that's going on and see what appeals to them. Thirdly, to listen to some good philosophical debate and just to have some fun.
And it's generally to promote philosophy to people who are interested, yeah. Okay, Anya, could you tell us a little bit about this festival and what sort of events are going on there? And
all kinds of events. I mean, just to add to what Rick has said, we just really thought, you know, London needs a philosophy festival. You know,
right.
So we thought this really should be happening in a place like London, a festival of ideas. Everybody can participate. And I think in the programme there's something for everybody.
Well, so first of all, maybe we haven't been clear. Where is it and when is it? And
that is a very good point. It's this coming Sunday, the 18th of December,
right,
at Conway Hall in central London, very close to Holborn Station. Conway Hall on Red Lion Square,
uh-huh,
and we're taking over the whole ground floor of the hall, so we've got various rooms and several events running parallel, so there's something for everybody.
Okay.
And Pete, of course, is going to be there and is going to philosophize with children. We've got four sessions for philosophizing with,
mm-hmm,
children. We've got philosophizing with teens, and of course, you know, a lot of interactive games and some lectures and also some debates. Some, I think, are going to be very, very fiery debates.
Okay, tell us a bit about what some of the debates are that you've got featured.
Well, I think one of the more explosive debates, potentially,
mm-hmm,
is a roundtable debate that we've planned for 4 o'clock, which is philosophy versus religion, ?
Mm-hmm.
And we've got various people participating in that. We've got Dr. Anthony Carroll, who's also a Jesuit, John Holroyd, who's a religious study teacher, Dr. Stephen Law, who's also a philosophy lecturer and an atheist, and Hamza Andreas Tsotsis, who is an Islamic philosopher. So I think that could be a very interesting debate.
That should be explosive. We're going to lock the doors and clean
and
up the mess afterwards.
Yeah.
Okay, brilliant. What are you doing in the festival, Pete? What have you?
Well, we're coming down to do some philosophy with children.
Right.
So I suppose we're the crush.
Okay.
So children, we've got two. Sessions, one for children age 9 to 11.
What time is that?
And that'll be, well, there's one at 11 o'clock,
uh-huh,
and then again at 2 o'clock. Yeah, so there's one group for 9 to 11 year olds and one for 5 to 8 year olds.
Okay, and what if people want to bring their children along? What do they need to know?
Right, well, first of all, they need to get in touch with us. So to book a place, they need to email Emma at thephilosophyshop.co.uk.
Okay.
So they'll need to let us know, and because there's a limited number of spaces, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that, of course, they may want to leave their children. However, the very young ones
to go off to a lecture or something.
Exactly,
yeah.
But with some of the young ones, they might want to stay to accompany them. But what we request is that anyone who stays in the room is quiet and lets the children do the philosophising.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So what about if they're turning up on the day with their children? Is there any chance of getting in then?
Well, there may well be a chance
but
of getting in. We'll
don't
just
leave
have
it to chance.
Exactly, don't leave it to chance. We'll just have to see what the situation's like.
Okay.
But no, we may have to...
I mean, is there a sneak preview of what you're going to be talking about, or is that left to the day?
I think that I'll leave that to the day.
Okay.
Can I just say that all events on the day are free, also even the ones that have to be pre-booked, which are only the children's events, but there's no charge for anything.
And do you need any sort of qualification or understanding of philosophy to come along?
You've just got to be willing to think and to cooperate with everybody in having a discussion, that's all.
Okay, and... Rick, I see that you've got Roger Scruton, who's a philosophy that some top philosopher that some people might have heard of, doing a lecture. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Roger Scruton will be talking, he'll be giving a lecture on the role of philosophy in the conduct of everyday life.
Right.
And that'll be a memorial lecture in memory of a philosopher we used to know called George Ross,
okay.
Who was a friend of Roger Scruton's and of ours.
All right, and you've also got an award ceremony. What's that about, this award ceremony?
Oh, well, this will be the first time we've given what we hope will be an annual award.
Mm-hmm.
And the award will be for contributions in the fight against stupidity.
Right.
Which we think is a lot of what philosophy is actually about. That can have various meanings, but... one thing about stupidity is that we're all stupid sometimes,
uh-huh.
in the sense of having unexamined assumptions, leaping to conclusions without checking them properly, getting to entrenched habits of thought and so on. And one of the things about philosophy is that we try to avoid such traps. And it's not easy, but you just have to carry on doing that.
Okay.
And so we've asked readers and other people to nominate who they think should win this this award, who's done the most recently to help us all fight against stupidity. And we've got a winner, and we're going to announce who that winner is at the festival.
Okay. And... have you ever thought in the future of doing a contribution to Stupidity Awards?
Oh, I make such contributions all the time.
Yeah.
It's not the Darwin Award.
Yeah. Okay.
Can I also point out that there are some very young philosophers who are making a contribution,
sure.
to the festival. There are some students, philosophy students, there are sixth form students from St Dunstan's College in Southeast London. They're going to give little presentations about their philosophical thoughts, and I think that's very, very brave of them, and I hope a lot of people,
sure.
will support them in this.
And you have like lots of little events and things going on throughout the day, so
lots
anybody
can
sort of turn up any time of the day.
Absolutely, just turn up, and we'll provide you with teas and coffees as well.
Okay, where can people find out about the timetable? Is there some place they can go to get the timetable if they?
The best place to go for the timetable is to go to the Philosophy Now website, and there's a page within that which is linked from the main page. So if you go to www.philosophynow.org, and then you'll see a link to the page for the festival. It's right at the top, and you can't miss it.
Okay, brilliant. I just want to ask, why might somebody who really doesn't know a lot about philosophy or doesn't really consider themselves a philosopher, why might they want to go to this festival?
Simply because it stimulates them. I mean, it's just an interesting event to come to and to simply think. You know, you don't need, uh-huh. a background in philosophy. You don't need to be interested in philosophy. You don't have to want to know who Plato was or who Kant was. You've just got to want to think about important questions, such as we've got a speed debate event here about what is art.
Okay.
You know, these are generally interesting questions. And just meet other people who are interested in thinking and have a good conversation.
And okay, so to repeat, this is on a... Conway Hall on Sunday from 11 till about 7, and then there's a party afterwards.
That's right.
And it's absolutely free for anybody who's interested. You don't need to book except for the particular sessions with the kids, is that right? Okay, well, finally, I just want to throw a little question out at each of you. What is the meaning of life? All right, who wants to have a go first? No one.
Go on then. Oh, oh gosh. Now, I would say the meaning of life has very much to do with what you put into it.
Uh-huh.
I think that's the key thing, is that, trying to look for an objective outside of you meaning is where the problem lies. And I think when you realise that actually the value comes from you, from us.
So what sort of things are you looking to create meaning in your life? What sort of thing makes meaning in a person's life?
Well, I'm kind of with Socrates on this, that,
yeah.
Examination, thinking, but also with Socrates on this, you know, you need to sort of let your hair down occasionally and have some fun.
Uh-huh.
But I do like the...
I think there's a
nice, bald, wasn't he?
There's a nice story, I think, of Thomas Nagel, who writes about the absurdity of life. Because sometimes if there's no external meaning, you feel as though life is just absurd and crazy and silly. But there's one thing worth bearing in mind that Nagel pointed out, and that is that if the world is absurd, then that too in itself is absurd. So the idea of absurdity is itself absurd, and if there's no meaning in the universe, then that also doesn't matter. So I think that's important and worth bearing in mind.
If there's no meaning, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Okay, so that leaves you free to create
just
meaning
chill
as you want.
Yeah? Exactly.
Okay, and
yes, I think we have to consider the possibility that there's no inherent meaning to life, and that the world indeed, or our lives indeed, are absurd, which I think makes sense, because very often we see that the world doesn't cooperate with our expectations or explanations of it. So we've got to be prepared for this. But the question is, you know, can't there still be some kind of meaning? And I think a lot of people go through life and think there's something to be figured out. You know, there's some sort of mystery, some sort of miracle, some sort of puzzle that they have to decode, and then they will grasp the meaning. And I don't think it's like that. I would agree with Pete that it's more something that you bring to the world. Uh-huh. You know, you can bring your own projects to the world, and you can give meaning to the world. And I think that's a very personal thing. You know, this can be, I think, answered only by the individual. But I think also, I mean, to me, meaning of life means it's best achieved by leading a life that somehow, in some sense, lived for others. And not just for oneself.
Okay, what sort of things would add meaning to life? What sort of things?
Well, I think engaging with others, having meaningful relationships with others, meaningful dialogues, as we're trying to have on Sunday, I think that
meaningful
genuinely...
Meaningful meaning what, though? This is what...
Yes, well, that's good. Well, I mean, in the sense that you gain something from them. You know, that they change you in a very profound way, perhaps.
But gain mutually rather than just...
Yes. I think the idea of mutuality, I would really say, is very important. Yeah.
Okay. Rick, what about you? What do you think the meaning of life is?
Okay, well, what is the meaning of life is obviously a crucial question that lots and lots of people worry about. And I think the one of the reasons it's never been completely hammered down and settled is that...
Nobody knows what it is.
Yeah, but people aren't even clear what the question is.
Yeah, right.
Because one problem is that the word meaning itself is used in at least three different ways. I mean, it could mean significance. You know, what does this mean? You could look at some hieroglyphics and say, what does this mean?
Right.
So what is the meaning of life could mean? What is what's the significance of life? What does it tell us about the universe, the fact that we are here?
Right.
Then meaning can mean importance. It can be, you know, this means a lot to me. It means, you know, this is very important to me. So you could say, why is life important? Why does it matter? Like, that's what it can mean. Or meaning can be to do with purpose. You say, what's this meant for? You're asking about its purpose. So, the question
could be... What are you trying to achieve, sort of thing?
What are you trying to achieve? What's the purpose of your life? Mm-hmm. You know, what are you trying to achieve in your life? So perhaps one of the reasons that this question never gets settled is that different people who are asking it are asking different questions among those three. Or sometimes they're asking two questions at the same time and they're not even clear about this. Maybe you could get some objective answers about, you know, what's the significance of life. You could deduce various things from the fact of our existence and the nature of our existence. But importance, I don't know. Importance is always importance to somebody, as far as I'm concerned. And the same with purpose, perhaps. You know, you say, what's life for? I say, well, what do you want it to be for? So I think there's a lot of choice involved. I think life can be very meaningful, and is very meaningful. But the meaning is what you put into it yourself.
Okay, that seems to be a bit of a consensus. There is a mini talks on the meaning of life at the Philosophy Festival.
What do you think the meaning of life is, Grant? Oh, we're all out of time.
I think the meaning of life is probably to learn and apply the meaning of love, but I don't think I've got time to really expand on that.
Meet Grant at the Philosophy Festival and ask him about this.
Yes, ask me that difficult question. Can I just get you all to repeat the name of your organisation and the web address where they can find you? And hopefully I'll see a lot of you listeners at the Philosophy Now Festival at Conway Hall on the 18th of December. Okay, Pete?
Right, so Philosophy Foundation, check us out at www.philosophy-foundation.org, and remember to contact Emma at thephilosophyshop.co.uk if you want to book a place for your children at the festival.
Okay, Rick?
Like Grant, I'm from Philosophy Now magazine. It's www.philosophynow.org.
And you can go there and order a single copy or read various articles, for instance.
Absolutely.
And check out the timetable for the festival. Anya?
For Philosophy for All events, please go to www.pfalondon.org or find us on meetup.com. That's Philosophy for All London. Also, the London School of Philosophy is www.londonschoolofphilosophy.org.
Okay, thank you. You've been listening to the Philosophy Now radio show. We'll be back next year on January the 10th with I don't know what yet, but have a good Christmas and hopefully see some of you at the festival.